woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Oh, and welcome to Sacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 6, NASDAQ Futures down 42. This is after a pretty interesting day yesterday as we were way the hell up. We were up 325 points in the NASDAQ in the morning and went down to up like 50 by noon and then came back up maybe 150, but it gave up the huge amount of increase we had in the morning for sure. Kevin, I'm looking here at the. We have Kevin with us.
You do have Kevin with you.
I'm looking here right. It's going to go right over Carl's house. This hurricane heading to your house. It looks to me.
Well, that's fun because I'm driving to Nashville on Sunday.
It'll probably be already done with that. Nashville by Sunday. Maybe not.
Yeah, but if it's coming north towards me, then that means I'm going to drive through
it's
it.
It's going to go right at your car.
Yeah.
What are you doing down in Nashville?
Well, actually, it's going to go right at a rental car. But,
oh, all right.
Because I'm driving it because it would take just as long to fly and be much more hassle.
So, yeah.
Yes, I will be at the CSCMP Edge Conference.
Well, plus you can bring all your guns and your mace and all that stuff in the car.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I can defend myself.
Yeah.
But CSCMP is the Council of Supply Chain Management Professionals. And I'm a member.
I see. Well, good for you. I remember when my mom was up. They had one of those women's professional organization chapters in Evergreen Park. So she...
Yeah, that sounds like something I'd enjoy.
So my uncle said, what is that, women poking along? She wasn't too happy with that.
No, I would have... Especially knowing your mother, I but that, would not imagine so.
But then her brothers were always a challenge, so... Actually, it looks like it's heading right for Southern Illinois after it gets out of Tennessee here.
Well, it's good for them. Helps build their character.
And a little bit of rain. This thing, pretty darn big. Eh? Hit the ground at 140 miles an hour. That's kind of a lot.
That is a lot.
Did you ever? I asked somebody yesterday on the show. I'm kind of repeating a little bit, but did you ever see that? There's one that's kind of brief, but there's actually more of a detailed wind scale on degrees of wind and what it messes up. You know, 30 miles an hour, you know, hard for older people to walk down the street against the wind. 40 miles an hour, you're liable to get knocked off balance. 50 something else, 60, I think it's 60, what an empty railroad car could possibly go over, 75, a full railroad. I mean, it's unreal. Every 10 miles an hour, it gets like almost geometric. I can't imagine what 140 is. It must be like, it's almost like it could hit by water, you know, at that speed. I don't think there's no way you could stand up, is there?
Well, I would think not.
I think once you get over 100.
Although I keep seeing these news reports on TV where they're kind of standing, ankle deep in water, so they must be around it somewhere.
Well, and they're at the shore, and, you know, nobody wants to see anybody get hurt, but wouldn't you just like to see one time the person got like whisked out to the water and like then rescued or something, but just is right off their feet. As they're standing there in the middle of the thing with the wind blowing and the hat going and the raincoat going the whole bit. You wonder how dumb are these people? But
yeah, well, there have been some great news scams too. Like I remember one a couple of years ago. I can't remember who the reporter is now, but he got busted on it. He was paddling around in a canoe like he was in this really deep flooded zone, and the water was actually about 8 inches deep.
Yeah, I remember that. I don't know if you were checking out the last few emails we went back and forth with, and yesterday, everybody knows, I mean, it's like I can repeat it every day, but everybody knows how pissed off I am that the government has stopped giving regular people, the citizenry, money supply numbers weekly that are absolutely tradable. Not tradable, but you should know that when you're trading, certainly if you're in my business managing money for people. And the government decided we don't deserve them. Well, yesterday, we got the numbers for August. Now, what was yesterday, Kevin? It's like the 24th, 25th? We get the numbers for August?
It was the 26th, actually.
Yeah,
so.
I think they might have come out the day before or something. But so if you look at the growth from July to August, it's a 6.7%. annual increase in M2, and I got to listen to this mealy mouth Powell up there tell me how much he's fighting inflation. Do I really need to listen to that? I mean, does anybody have any shred of truth of anything they say these days? I mean, is truth just but a concept now? It must be.
I'm not sure it even qualifies as a concept anymore, Tom.
Is everybody happy with this?
Maybe in a very very abstract sense.
I know when you're in the political world, I mean, we're going to have, you know, Carl on later and a lot of guys on the show, me included, just are aggravated when people lie to us, okay, and we get it. But we also know that the dynamic of politics, I think we should know, the dynamic of politics is a lot different. You say stuff to people to pick up votes. And if people agree with you, they don't necessarily vote for you. You just have to be very careful you don't say anything that causes somebody to vote against you. There's all kinds of single-issue voters out there. They probably shouldn't be, but they are. I mean, if you are you know, I won't say dumb enough because it's actually pretty clever, like Trump, to walk into a meeting of the Restaurant Association and say, you're not gonna have taxes on tips and walk out, there might be, out of the 100 people in there, 10 people dumb enough to vote for you because they think you can actually pull it off. Now, how you can walk into Congress, or where all revenue bills come from the House, and say, here's five groups I talked to that I said we're not going to tax them, make sure you put it in your next bill, I don't even think Caesar could do that. Now, the other candidate, oh, don't worry, if you walk into places that people are dying on their rent and say, I'm going to give you $50,000 toward a new house, and walk out, there might be 10 people out of 100 there that are going to be dumb enough to vote for it and think you can pull it off. It's a whole different science than what we're used to, Kevin, and it's especially aggravating to people like Carl and you and me and people that all we do is dig for the numbers and the truth all day. But we're not going to change the world. I mean, that is the way it is, and if we were running for office, we'd probably do some of the same things, hopefully not nowhere near as bad.
Yeah, well, not in the same degree. But just a little fun fact, you know that Kamala Harris is also saying she will not tax tips. Isn't that fun?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, how do you... I talked to my... If you think you guys are argumentative, you should see my... some of my guys I have a cocktail with. Why even go? I have no idea. There are guys there, if you say it's raining out, they'll immediately say, what do you mean? I see the sun. They make you guys look like kids when it comes to arguing about everything. So one guy last night, the long dissertation, finally said, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. It had to do with, he knows people that have cash tips and they don't report them and they don't pay. I understand that. I'm not an idiot. I know that if you leave an extra $10 on the bar, the guy is going to probably put it in his pocket or put it in a tip jar and they're going to split it. And it probably is never going to see the light of day. I get that. I'm not a moron. But the fact is, there's something now the IRS uses called implied tips. You can't turn in 15 American Express cards at night if you're a waiter for an average tip of 20%, and the other 15 you say there was none. There's an implied tip with everything. What, is it like 8% or something?
Right. You can understate it, but you can't. Yeah, when way back in the day when I was in college and I worked as a waiter, what they always told us is you have to at least report your tips up to minimum wage.
Right.
Yeah. At the very least, you had to report that much, which was fun, you know, because it forced us to do math.
Well, the girl downstairs works in one of these high end joints. How's it for the south side? One of these chop houses.
Yeah, lots of high end joints on the south side.
Well, no, but she works in one of these chop houses or crab houses or someplace that all the high end people and the conventioners go. And I said, she goes, I very rarely get a cash tip. I'm sure if somebody uses their American Express card, puts 20% on there, and slides her a 50 on the side, it's probably not going to see the light of day. Or maybe they get together and split those. I don't know. I don't think the government's going to see it. But I don't think, she goes, it's not even 5% of my income. Even if I did report it, it's nothing.
Yeah, I leave cash tips all the time.
Well, so do I. Because
I know they prefer that.
Oh, sure they do. But it doesn't mean that they're turning that ticket in and paying nothing. If you leave them 20%, I think they're probably going to pay on 10. And it's probably going to be taken out. It's probably going to be taken out of their check. I'm not sure how that works. But we can ask Greg when he's on Monday. He'll know.
Yeah, he'll be able to tell you. I don't remember how it worked back. I mean, this was 1970, so I'm sure it works differently anyway. But
I actually work as a server on weekends, and
yeah,
it's a little different, I guess, than I guess the usual thing. But when you get cash tips, you just pocket those and you don't do nothing with them, you know. When it's like card tips and everything, when they add it to the card, it's like the taxes and everything are deducted from your check.
Yeah, there's no getting out of those.
They're
recorded.
Yeah, so they send you the whole thing, but then the check is the one that suffers with the taxes and everything, you know. At least that's how it works at the restaurant I work at.
Well, if the place gets bigger and bigger, and your checks are, the average check's $200, there's no way everybody's packing $40 worth of nothing. You know, if you get four of those a night, they all have different ways of going about it. Clearly, if you slide $10 to the bartender at the Tripoli, it's probably not seeing the light of day. But I'm saying there's not. It used to be all like that, I think, but now it's. But the point is, it's taxable. It's the same thing as somebody. I'm not saying you should send it in, Ricky. I'm not saying that. But it's the same thing as somebody in Illinois, dumb enough to say, "Oh, if I buy stuff on Amazon, who now charges some sales tax, depending on where it comes from, I don't have to pay sales tax." Yeah, you do. You're just not doing it. There's actually forms. You're supposed to pay quarterly, and if it's over a certain amount, you can't go buy a $10,000 TV from Iowa and not pay the tax on it. Well, you can. I mean, everybody does it, but to think that it's not required is quite another ignorant statement, right, Kevin?
Well, yeah, it almost sounds like splitting hairs, but it isn't.
No, it's not.
You're legally required to pay tax.
Well, the one
national, you know, avoiding paying taxes is a national sport in the United States.
Yeah.
So, and rightfully so.
Oh, sure.
You know, people wouldn't do it so much if they thought that the money collected was spent well. But that's the problem, is it's so easy to justify it in your mind because you know they're just pissing it away.
Well, that too.
And I think that's, you know, that's a big part of it. And so when they talk about, you know, fair shares, making sure nobody cheats, hiring IRS auditors, all those kinds of things, the first thing that anybody should say, I would really respect it if I heard this as a tax policy, is before we do anything to collect another cent of taxes, we're going to start spending your money well.
Well, but that's...
But they're not, you know, and that, of course, is, you know, if that were ever going to be implemented, that would be a very, very long-term project. But nevertheless...
I will bet, Kevin, that 40 to 50% of all the money the government takes in is sent out in checks to people. Pensions and things like that, and people that they employ, military,
Well, actually, it's used to pay for Medicare, but okay.
I mean, the big hole.
There's your largest percentage.
No, the largest percentage is probably still Social Security.
Well,
but I'm saying is you can't leave it to the eye of the beholder. Who's the guy? And he's such a, I don't know. Who are the two guys that were fighting over the one company? They're always in. The old Jewish guy, and then there's the younger guy. And they were, the one guy was real short the company, and the other was real long.
Well, that narrows it down when you say the old Jewish guy.
Well, no, I'm saying he was, I forget the name of the company, but he was long the stock, and the other guy was a big short sale, and the guy's on all the time. And he's talking, and the guy gets on there, and he's such a, you know, I get it, that the government tends to be wasteful, okay, in some ways. But I also know that for this guy to get on TV and say, the way I look at it, I shouldn't pay anything like the rest of you schmoes should, because make the aircraft carriers and all the other stuff, but because I'm so smart that I can have a charity and I can do better with my money and give it to the government. Well, there's only so much of that you can think, Kevin, because the story is, and this is what's bad about government, it's not run efficiently, but the story is, we're all getting together, this is the formation of democracy. We're all getting together, okay, we want a government. Well, the government's going to provide this, 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 and this. We're going to elect people to manage it better, and they're going to compete for that job, blah, blah, blah. There's a theory behind this. Just because the actual working out of the deal, I mean, I think in human nature, most people would accept 5, 7, 10% corruption. Most people think it's gotten more than that. Okay, now, I disagree with that as much as you do. You know that. But the idea that because there's a little bit of corruption, I can opt out of the pay part, that's kind of a reach. I mean,
I'm not talking about the corruption, even though that is a part of it. I'm just talking about, you know, overhead, bloated, unnecessary overhead that you can talk about anything that the government does, and even if you have a program that is effective and that it really, really helps people who need help, or it really, really provides a service that citizens want, it's done so inefficiently, almost all the time, that you know it's getting wasted away. This is very, you know, if we really, really want to help people, the best methodology is to do it in a for-profit model, because when you do that, the government is limited by, well, I don't know what the government is limited by. Theoretically, it's limited by how much you can tax people. But since they're perfectly willing to spend money they don't have, it doesn't have that limitation. A not-for-profit is generally reliant entirely on donations, and there's only so much of that available. But if you can do something in a profit model, then as long as people are making money, they'll do more of it. It'll scale up, and that really will work to solve some of the issues that we have.
In theory, yes.
No, but in practice, yes.
Yeah.
It's happening, Tom.
There's nothing that says that the government... Let's put it this way. Let's take something like toll collectors, because we don't have those anymore. After COVID, we decided we don't want any toll collectors. But let's say toll collectors. We could have government-run, inefficiently toll collectors and them get some kind of a union and blah, blah, blah. Or you could actually have, and have had in the past, a contract that went out for bid that would put it into the competitive area. But I think, Kevin, this idea that, well, again, I don't think there's anybody on earth real well, but when you trade 20 years in the trading crowd, you're into competitive stuff. I don't think the government's any less efficient than like one of these big hospitals now that are like a monopoly. I don't think they're that much less efficient than Commonwealth Edison in terms of how much they pay people and there's very few places that are in the quote profit model now. I think Microsoft's well out of the profit model. They're in a monopoly model.
I can think of some small ones, and I can think of some bigger ones. So,
I can think of some small ones too, and I think just about
a smaller
all.
One would be like a Spiritech.
I'm going to say virtually all
software testing and hires people on the autism spectrum, because the strength of people who are autistic is that they can focus for long periods of time on something, and they're very detail-oriented.
I'm going to say so agriculture.
It exists to provide employment for people who would other who might otherwise be unemployable, and certainly have a difficult time holding jobs, and they've grown. They started out with 5 employees. They have about 125 now because they keep getting more clients. So that's one example. Another example is the Walgreens distribution centers, and they intentionally went and built their systems, their warehousing systems, to be easily used by people with all kinds of disabilities, but not to the exclusion of people who don't have disabilities. So if you go like to their South Carolina distribution center, it is about 42-43% people who have disabilities that have flocked there from all over the country because they have a situation where they can go in, they can be as productive as the person working next to them who doesn't have any disabilities. And why would Walgreens go out of their way to do such a thing? Because that's 42% of their workforce that will never leave them. They're never going to have the expense of turnover because they have the best place to work for people who have disabilities. So it saves them a hell of a lot of money over time, and therefore they have started building out all of their other distribution centers that way, and all kinds of other businesses have gone in to observe what they do and try and duplicate what they do, major corporations like that, because you'll scale it. If it makes you money, you'll scale it. That's the difference between government saying, well, I can provide some assistance to people with disabilities, and somebody saying I can provide jobs to people with disabilities.
I'm not going to dispute the American intelligence, the American dream, but I also know that competition is the best thing in the world for every industry except yours. Then it's cutthroat competition, and you need a break.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is that when I said it is happening, I just wanted to make sure
it is.
You know what I meant by it is happening.
I also know it's happening that every small pharmacy damn near in the state of Illinois and probably other states is put out of business because the state didn't pay anybody. And
Walgreens, but that's not related to what I'm discussing.
What I'm saying, the point is, we're talking about inefficiencies. And the idea is, for most people, my question to you is, when you read stories about Hoover Dam and the Golden Gate Bridge and all these kinds of big, even the interstate highway system back in the day, or I won't say railroads because all they do is kill people and build those things, they were incredibly more efficient. They went out for bids. It didn't look like there were people schlumping around. Everybody seemed to be working. They had time frames on people getting the thing done on time. You look around here, every one of these highway projects, Kevin, there's nobody working on them. They're easily 2 to 3 times longer in time. Now, is it because only 3 or 4 people have them lined up for the next 10 years, or is there no competition? Is there no people who want to build roads?
They're bid rigging with 3 or 4 companies.
Well, but I mean, say, how many people are in the road business these days? I mean, is that a business nobody wants to be in? If you go up to build,
I tend to doubt that, but I think the entry barriers are incredible, especially because the government has injected itself more than it should in there. Obviously, the bid is going to be that you're bidding to the government, but if they were to operate on the up and up, and this goes back to what you're saying about corruption, if the coefficient of corruption is too high, that's a barrier to entry for other companies getting into the business.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to fish my way through here in my usual bumbling way, I'm trying to figure out whether government is an outlier or it's a reflection of what's going on in a lot of other places. I mean, it's a reflection of us. It's hard to bitch at a government for owning money when everybody in the country owns money. You know what I'm saying?
I think when you can find places where government is less engaged with the industry, that you'll find a more efficient industry.
I'm surrounded by that. That's why the two of us are good on together, Kevin. You're surrounded by people that are trying to be efficient because they are competing because they have to. I'm surrounded by people.
A whole lot of manufacturing distribution businesses that are that were started by bootstrap entrepreneurs. Yeah.
And I'm surrounded by CBOE, the Board of Trade, where the guy has his private jet, the OCC. You can't. They're somewhat quasi protected kind of places. If the corporate jet needs gas, the guy raises the price for quotes for my machine. I mean, we're talking about a monopoly that was given. It was never given to that extent. The monopoly was given is for those guys that have a trading floor and have a competitive marketplace, and they've taken it to the next level. You could get rid of half the people at all those places, probably. Or not get rid of them, but you could sure as hell cut their salary on the top end. What do they do? I mean, I'm surrounded by that, Kevin. I mean, surrounded by it. So it's you see the big banks. Do you think those people have to be there at those? If they're not protected, do you think Citigroup is an efficient operation? I mean, I'm saying that part of the society is growing, I think, faster than the good part you're seeing. Is it just a reflection, or you can't compete if you're not cheating? Or I don't know what it is. That's what I'm asking the question. But clearly, something is wrong, and I'm with you.
But that goes back to what we were originally discussing. Then is it to the extent that you have that regulatory state involvement in it, and it's greater, and it's causing all kinds of inefficiencies. That's another reason that people don't want to pay taxes, because they know that this is not working to the benefit of the person who pays for the service, who pays for the or who pays for a product that is overregulated.
Well, we got to go to
break. True in banking. I mean, I saw it. Actually, working in mid-sized banks, they were very, very focused on being as lean as possible.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying once you get that umbrella over your head, it changes in more places. I mean, how many people work for Citigroup, for God's sake, compared to five little banks in your and my neighborhood? I mean, you're right. Those guys are going to compete their ass off, right? But in terms of size, in terms of what would the four banks now, they have how many, what percentage of the deposits? And by the way, that's another law. You're only supposed to have a certain percentage of deposits. Haven't they all gone through that and nobody ever says break up?
Nobody seems to.
S&P futures up, down 3. NASDAQ futures up 20, down 27. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JACKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjacks@live.com.
Well, North Face Stocks and Jacks. I'm coming out, Ricky, on the board. S&P futures down 3. NASDAQ futures down 24. This is the day we're waiting for the Fed's preferred inflation report, that nobody knows what's in it. It's a great thing. Talk about a scam, for God's sake. We're in Asia. Now, these guys have been hot again today. Nikkei up 903. It's 2.3%, 39,829. Just pour some money in the system. These guys are all going to be like the Weimar Republic, Kevin. Hang Seng up 707, 3.5%, 20,006. So they pumped this one, I'm going to say 15% in like a week. That's a real number. Shanghai up 86, 3,087. That's 2.8%. China's stocks see best week since 2008 on stimulus impact as most Asian markets rise. Who says we can't make wealth? It used to be you couldn't make wealth, but now you can. Over in Europe, DAX up 170.9%, FTSE up 44.5%, CAC around up 24.3%. So the Asian people are pouring money in, we're pouring money in. The Europeans are so far not, but it looks like they're going to because they're going up too. Yesterday, Dow was up 260, S&P's up 23, NASDAQ up 108, which is a good day, but they were up over 300. So we're making some, we're down a little bit today. We'll see if we make some of that back. Bonds, 10-year unchanged, 3.79. The Bund down 1 basis point, 2.15. Japan up 2 basis points, 0.85. Oil up 24 cents, but still low, 67.91. Brent up 19 cents, 71.79. Natural gas down 2 cents, 272. Gold down 450, but still 26.90. Still, banging on his 2,700 number. Silver down 7 cents, but over 32.27. Copper unchanged, 462. We've got foreign exchange. The euro still 111.6, where it has been. The pound 134 almost, so that's... Dollar's been down against the pound. Japan 143.12, and we've got Bitcoin up 318, 65,368. Doesn't this get... This gets to be almost, like, weird. Take the dollar down, everything else goes up. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 67 degrees right now with a high of 71. Windy with intervals of clouds and sunshine. Tonight will be strong wind subsiding, partly cloudy with a shower in the area late with a low of 61 degrees. So we're in Phoenix, Arizona. 80 degrees right now with a high of 113. Very hot with sizzling sunshine. This is a breaking record temperature. Breaking the record of 107 set in 2009. Tonight will be very clear and very, very warm with a low of 82 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 19 minutes. We're looking at 44 minutes. Inbound Innes from Lynn Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 24 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 27 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 26 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, the White Sox evade history, beating the Angels 7-0. And today, we got a couple of games. The White Sox play the Reds at 1:20 p.m. I'm sorry, the Cubs play the Reds at 1:20 p.m., the White Sox play the Tigers at 5:40 p.m., and the Diamondbacks play the Padres at 8:40 p.m. Lastly, NFL. Yesterday, the Cowboys beat the Giants 20-15, and this Sunday, September 29th, we got the Bears and the Rams playing at 12 p.m., and the Cardinals and Commanders playing at 3:05 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
The Kevin, when I saw that money supply number yesterday, I just was sort of stunned. I mean, and yet... Kyle and I, of course, were jousting a little bit, and by the way, it's actually so much fun, Kevin, to do the show because I get to argue with people I agree with, just trying to get more sources, more pearls of wisdom out of them, because I think it's real easy to take the other side of this argument that we have with inflation and all of a sudden this big disparity, not all of a sudden, but this disparity in wealth between some people and other people and how it was put together and the almost like the invisible hand behind it, and we're going right back to it. And it, and Carl is going to rant, I'm sure, and he's going to say, there's no way you're going to get away with it. Inflation's going to keep popping up. Your deficit's going to keep doing this, blah, blah, blah. And I know that he is right. I also know, God, Kevin, they've gotten away with it for 20 years. And and you wonder, are they just so much better at it because they're coordinated worldwide or whatever it is? But the fact is, I agree with Carl, but I have no inkling whatsoever that something is going to happen tomorrow that changes it. These guys are gleeful to go right back to it. They kept things not growing, the money supply, for a little bit, and had a little bit of a pause, but if you're 40 years old, Kevin, how do you not know that this is the way it is? You just better get hold of some assets, you better get hold of some stocks. God help you if you put, if you have your money in the bank, you're an absolute moron. You know, what are we doing here again? I mean, and yet, I would, if you would have written a paper back in 1982 saying a government could get away with this, or the world governments could get away with this, Kevin, it would have been an F paper, and yet they have. How is it happening from a layman more than...
How is it happening? Well, it's... I think it's on purpose, Tom. I think it starts... You know, it starts with having crappy schools that don't teach the things that you need to know to have, you know, an analytical thought about any of this stuff. So, you know, how do you suppose most people deal with it isn't the right word. How do they recognize inflation? Do you think people are recognizing inflation because they can look at the money supply numbers?
They look at the gas prices and they look at
what's going on.
They look at gas prices, they look at food prices, they look at their insurance bill. They look at the stuff that regular people look at.
Yeah. And I think lately the problem that those in, you know, those who are the people pulling the strings have is they went too far.
A little
as
bit.
Long as we were cruising along where, you know, I wasn't appalled at my grocery bill compared to last month, you can get away with a lot. But when I go in and I go, holy crap, every time I try to get to the checkout counter, or when people get to the point where they're just saying, I'm sorry, I can't buy half of this stuff anymore. You know, mac and cheese it is. What a wonderful dinner that can be. When you get to that point, then you have a very disgruntled public. And I think that's where we're sitting right now.
But the public is...
And remember, there's all this other crazy-ass stuff going on, too. So when you get to the social stuff, and I've said this before, if the Republicans were running another candidate, you know, and I'm not talking about Nikki Haley, I'm not sure who the right candidate would be, but anybody who was just, you know, more articulate and who could state a conservative position, this race would be over. It would have been over with Biden. It would have been over with Kamala Harris.
Kevin, I would have gone early voted, for God's sake.
Yeah, so there's that. But by the same token, when you have all of this stuff going on with, you know, politicians supporting women, men, trans men playing women's sports, when you have drag queen story hour, when you have all that's going on with let's put tampons in men's bathrooms, all this litany of all of these social things that are going on, and now all of a sudden everybody who used to think Trump was crazy are saying it ain't any crazier than the other side.
Well, that's scary, but you're right. Well, a lot of this stuff is, in some ways, Kevin, all you just said, I don't want any of that stuff, but there's two things, okay? One is when you look at the, the gay community, all right? Or you look at old people. I'm going to say politically it's the same thing. Old people vote. So does the gay community.
Actually, it's not that that's such a big voting block as much as it is as a big donor block.
Well, but it's all that I'm saying. I'm not talking about, you know, the transgender and playing basketball and stuff. I don't know where that all came from, but I'm talking about the boys' town in Chicago in terms of voting and in terms of supporting their people. You can count on them. There's a reason why all these people are in the gay pride parade. And if you were mayor of the city or the governor, I bet your fanny is in the gay pride parade. Because you can't not be.
Well, because you can't not be, which is kind of strange, because for decades we've been told the message was always, hey, we're no different than everybody else. We just have, we're just attracted to different people, but we're no different, and we want to be treated the same. And now all of a sudden, no, we actually want a whole month. We were taught not to care, and all of a sudden now I'm supposed to care again.
Well,
I don't understand.
There's only a couple times, Kevin, that I had really bad feedback when people used to, you know, call in all the time and write in with feedback. One of the times I had real bad feedback when I said, look, if we really care, and we do, I think the people listening to the show care, if we really care and we do nothing but rag constantly about these people that seem to get ahead because they make themselves be heard both by effort and by money, you know, I was tongue-in-cheek. I said, we should start a Stocks and Jocks lobby group. That every time Senator Durbin or Senator whoever the hell he happens to be does something we don't like because somebody shoved $1,000 in his left pocket, we should be right behind him and shove $1,200 in his right pocket. Because these guys are equal opportunity scumbags to a certain extent. I mean, they're not, they're all bad people, but it gains us access, and it gains us, we can tell our story. That's at the nice level. That's what we're not even buying a vote. We're just saying, if that guy gets to sit there and talk to him about his position on money supply or something, maybe we can get in and talk to him about our position, and maybe ours will win the day. But I got so much crap back from people. Why should I have to put up a nickel for my guy to hear me? Well, that's so friggin' ignorant. I mean, it should be that way, but it isn't. Well,
it isn't ignorant. It's the right question. It's just that reality is that because you're not going to be heard otherwise.
I mean, I went to, you know, I'm not a.
Which again gives rise to a populist.
Well, but I mean, I went to APEC, which is the American Israeli Political Action Committee. I think so. They have this big shindig here in Chicago, and of course, they're trying to get money from everybody. But if you gave them a bunch of money, not only you could, of course, work this in your favor, they went through what they do for, you know, 2 hours worth of speeches. Kevin, you and I, and we think just by arguing with people in bars that we're causing some change, nothing could be further from the truth. These people just happen to be this Jewish group. These people took every new, they got up enough money, they took every new member of the House or the Senate, if they would go, over to Israel and said, look, the reason why we got a problem, we're up on this hill, you see the guys over there, see those guns? Well, they're pointed at you. I mean, they got their message out there. Okay, now some people came back and maybe didn't vote to give them another dime, whatever, but some people maybe did. But at least they got their message out there. And if you were in the group, if you and I gave, say we gave $10,000 to APEC, which if the people, of course, they want to give anything to Stocks and Jocks lobbyists, but if you get $10,000 to APEC, you not only gave them money, you had a job to do. When there was they had their big, huge meeting in Washington once a year, they would say, Kevin O'Neill, $10,000, you go and see, we'll make the appointments, you go and see Senator Schmo from Carolina, Representative Schmo from Louisiana, the appointments are made for you. You go in those offices and you sit down with them and you say, this is what we're doing and why. It was an incredible amount, not just of throwing money at somebody and expect to get a vote. The effort involved, when these guys are saying this, I'm going, I didn't think anybody did this. But if you're going to be successful and have government at least knowing what your issues are, I'm not saying working for you because you shove money in a person's pocket, it is a lot of effort. You can't just bitch at a bar, you know, or your family at dinner and cause problems. You got to do something, right? And we're not, we, I think, are trying to do something, but it's, you know, maybe by education and all kinds of things, we're trying to do our piece. But if we really cared, when I say we care, we do care. If we, the people on this show should all send $5,000 in someplace, I'm not saying send it to me, and we should have a group that if something's egregious, we get our ass out to Washington and we sit down with 10 people and we take them to dinner where we have to do and say, this is what we feel about this stuff. Maybe it gets us nowhere. But I mean, that's the reality of it. Am I right?
Yeah, so what are we going to call it? Stocks Pack? Jocks Pack? What are we going to call it?
What was Rodney's, the regular guy? The regular guy pack? Was his, instead of calling his store Big and Fat Guys, it was the regular guy store? We could make the regular guy store. The South Side Pack. Even though I live in Marissa.
Well, you got to pronounce that properly.
Yeah, dust outside. It's outside. Yeah. But I mean, the idea that
and spell it that way.
Yeah. but I mean, this is the reason why these people. I mean, it's if you live in Idaho, Las Cal, do they really even care about what's going on in a school in California? And you probably don't have an immigrant anywhere near you. You can't even. I mean, it's. The people pick these hot button issues, and they become hot button for a while, and all of a sudden they're not an issue anymore. It's just, but the politicians, the people are good at it, make every one of these things. You know what did Winston Churchill, the thing we said yesterday, having tact or something is a way to tell somebody to go to hell and they look forward to it or something like that.
Well, that's like an old Irish thing too.
Yeah, I mean I'm appalled at what we. But you know, here's the part that I hope someday, maybe in another world, I'll get to see it. How the hell is this orchestrated, Kevin? Because we're talking about a place that seemingly is totally malfunctional, and yet the drive, this choreography in the last 10 or 15 or 20 years to basically take all the wealth from one group and give it to another. And when I say this, I mean, this is not craziness. The last time we had inflation in this country at 5-10%, what it was, my mom, your grandmom, could go down the block, put their money in the bank, and get 10.5%, and basically get your inflation and plus a little bit interest. She was never harmed other than the food store, but she was never wealth harmed with cash. This time, if you've kept your money in a bank for 5 years, that money's worth maybe 60% of what it was when you put it in there. And my brother Dan, you know, he asked me once in a while. Imagine that, a brother asking somebody a question. He goes, I'm listening to these guys all day long on CNBC. How is it that everybody says that the rate of interest now essentially should be equal to the inflation rate? Doesn't anybody get any money for their for giving you money, giving you their dough? The fact is, some people do and some don't. We're not doing that. How did banks decide that they can charge 25% on people while they're paying you and I nothing for our cash, Kevin? How do you get to pull that off? Why aren't they paying 8-9% like they did in 1982?
Because people put up with it. People are not well educated in how any of this stuff works. Look, the average person, you know, you didn't have to be in our parents' generation. You didn't have to be college educated to know how things work.
No.
People had a really, really good idea. They had some, they understood economics principles, that, you know, all of that kind of stuff. I don't teach that anymore, and we intentionally don't teach it because it is, it creates problems for, you know, for the people. You'll go back, you'll eventually read the, what do we call it? The book I sent.
Yeah,
you.
I will. I will.
The Great Reset. And when you get to it, you're gonna see what the agenda is, and this is the official agenda. You know, this is the agenda of the World Economic Forum. Well, who attends the World Economic Forum? You know, you look at that list, and you say, "Oh, holy crap! This is all the people who are pulling the strings. This is where all the wealth is concentrated," and this is the positions that they've taken as a group. It isn't pretty.
No, it isn't. How all of a sudden, it is no different than what ITT tried to do 60 years ago. How all of a sudden were they able to pull it off? Is it just gradual? Is it people not knowing? Is it education? I mean, I remember reading once where they said, Did Winston Churchill think that Truman was an idiot coming from Missouri? And the answer was, well, he wasn't an idiot. I mean, people now have no idea of how good the primary and early secondary schools were in those days because they knew kids weren't going to go any further. So he didn't kick the kid up a grade if he couldn't read. He stayed right there till he could read. And then he said, and Truman, maybe with the exception of Churchill, was one of the most widely read men in the world. So there was no intellectual gap there that you might think some bumpkin from Missouri, but there wasn't. right? I mean, it sure didn't look like it.
Because we understood, fundamental concepts back then. It didn't matter if you were educated in the one room schoolhouse or a large school. It didn't matter. You there were some things that we were expected to know, and that's just the way it was, and that was good. It was a good thing.
Well, I don't. When you talk about the school thing, and I brought this up the other day, Kevin, and we're sort of skipping around, but it's sort of the same story. When you talk about my friend Kendall was saying his soon-to-be wife teaches on the South Side, and she says that virtually everybody in fifth grade, maybe even higher, has a second grade reading level. Well, the weird part there, Kevin, is I don't understand how come when I was in fifth grade, I read the newspaper every night. I couldn't wait to get some kind of a book. It might have been a crummy book. It might have been a Chip Hilton sports story or something. But the fact is, I wanted to be able to read. How do you not want to be able to read in fifth grade?
Well, and the way it was done, Tom, was, we were told, just read something you like. It doesn't have to be highly intellectual. So, but the first thing is, just getting kids to read was important. So, if you want to read somebody's, stupid baseball novel about some kid or you liked science fiction or whatever it was that you liked, it was just read, because developing that habit was so important. Now we're kind of in the video game world, and we're in the internet world, and there's still a lot to read there. We just don't do a good job of encouraging people to read what's worthwhile on there. I always say that, the internet is 99% crap, but it's so damn big that the 1% is substantial, and there is a lot of good information out there.
Don't teach
kids how to use the internet. Teach the kids how to use the internet intelligently.
The only thing it does do is you lost some weight when you had to go down to the library to do all the research all the time and come back. but other than that, I mean, it's fascinating. I was going to say, even comic books in those. I was never a big comic book guy, but some of my buddies were. We'd always go up and they'd buy our comic books. I'd get baseball cards and they got comic books. But you had to be able to read a comic book. There's probably more verbiage in a comic book than there is in today's movie, for God's sake.
Well, and nowadays you do have these these graphic novels that are essentially comic books with more story to them, and there are kids who get into those, and they're probably a leg up on others because they're at least reading something.
Yeah, what is this? I guess it bugs me because I still, on Sunday when I'm waiting for the ball game, and there's 15 minutes to go, I'll kick up the old Superman shows, but I just, for whatever reason,
they are a hoot, aren't they?
Oh, they're unbelievable. But the idea is, why does this bug me so much? Truth, justice, and the American way. I mean, I believe that as a kid watching these things. Why would you change that to truth, justice, and a better tomorrow? Isn't the American way synonymous with a better tomorrow?
Yeah, we just don't want to say that.
But why? Isn't that why we're here? So our generation, the next generation.
There's no better tomorrow with what we got going on right now.
But I mean,
now.
Isn't that,
that is true, Carl. But aside from that.
But isn't that why we're here? Why even the people from Mexico want to come here?
We don't. Yes, but we don't want nationalism.
If you
don't want borders, if you want world government, you want all of those kinds of things, then you have to get rid of this nationalistic concept of the American way.
When I say nationalistic, I know it comes from British law. It comes from the Judeo-Christian way of dealing with people. There's all kinds of predecessors to this. But the fact is, people get here, you get to do what you want, supposed to be. You're supposed to work for a common good, and the next generation's always supposed to be better. Isn't that the American way, or isn't it? If it isn't, maybe I should move somewhere else.
Well, freedom is actually,
I thought I mentioned that, in simplest terms,
it would be freedom.
But our view is freedom leads to all this other stuff, all the good stuff that freedom gives people. Doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But that, you know, the point is that if we can get rid of that silly thought, then you know, you have to get that out of the consciousness so that you can so you can move on to the agenda.
Well, there was a reason why Superman.
This is why, as a pushback, "Make America Great Again" resonates with so many people.
There's a reason why Superman came to America, right? Because he believed in what everybody else here believed in. Wasn't that the idea?
He came to America because the rocket crashed on the Kent's farm. If he had landed 50 miles outside of Moscow, boy, the world would have been in trouble.
God. Anyway, so Kevin, real quick, you know, Carl, chime in here. Very interesting discussion yesterday. Besides, Carl, I think what we're going to try and do is, when we have two really good guests like we do every day, we're going to, the 5 minutes before and five after. A lot of times you guys have questions between each other that I don't always know about. But what did you think about the conversation yesterday with, let's put this way, and a economic point of view, even if you're not a sports person, what's happening in sports today, in college and even high school sports today, is an entirely new economic world. It's almost like 1973 when you deregulated airlines, railroads, trucking, it's like a whole new world. This thing yesterday, I could be talking to Lou still, and wait a minute, are these things contracts? Are people paying their taxes? Is the auto dealership calling this an expense? Are they trying to write it off? Are they saying it's a charitable? There's so many questions there. What do you guys make of this? Real quick, and the Las Vegas guy. I mean, it's not, who cares about him? But, well, I'm not going to say I care about the guy. I care about everybody. But the story is, he wasn't getting paid by a guy who promised him to get paid. That somehow an assistant coach hooked him up with. So he says, "Screw you guys, I'm not paying this year. Playing this year." Isn't that basically the crux of it, Kevin?
Yeah.
And now the question is,
what he was saying is, if I play a fifth game, I burn my eligibility this year.
Right.
So it's my last year. You promised me that if I would come to your school, you would pay me. I don't know how much money it was.
It's like 100G, I think, and he's gotten 8 or something. Grand.
So you promised me that you would pay that, and you haven't delivered. So screw you. I'll go someplace else, play next year. They'll deliver. Maybe.
Well, then it gets, the intrigue grows, and Carl loves intrigue. Wasn't the deal sort of brokered by an assistant coach and some buddy, you know, some booster someplace? Head coach says, "I know nothing." Assistant coach, "I don't know what he's saying." And the booster's like, "I never said I'd give him anything." Unless, so it's become this mess, and of course there's no contract. And how many times, this got to be happening all over the place.
Well, you know, why is anybody surprised that we all yell about money in politics, right?
Yeah.
That, yeah. You know, Citizens United and all the super PACs and, by the way, Mayor Adams allegedly in New York allegedly got a chunk of his campaign cash from Turkey.
Why the hell would a turkey give him any money? I'm so naive, I can't even.
Well, I'd like to know what the quid pro quo was.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I thought it was something, it had something to do with the embassy, you know, with building their embassy and getting.
Well, it could be as simple as that. I mean, who knows what but the fact is that if you want to talk about the scale of illegality in political campaigns, taking anything from a foreign entity is pretty far up on the list. Okay. So he gets indicted for that. But if you think that doing this in some way, I mean, I get it. Professional sports is a racket, okay? I mean, I saw the last game that was played at the Smoky Stadium here, and now they're going to move it down into Knoxville. And obviously the reason they're doing that is that they think they will make more dough, even though it's a double-A ball team. They think they'll make more dough putting the stadium down there. Now, I'm sure there is some hinky stuff that went on somewhere with something with the people that own the stadium, the people that own the team, the you know, what they want to do with the land here because it's high-value real estate right near the highway. There's a Buc-ee's across the street now. There's supposedly a casino going in on the other side of the highway. So, you know, because the Cherokee Indians can get around the Tennessee gambling laws. You know, I mean, the usual BS, right?
Yep, yep.
But the fact of the matter is that's double A ball. Now, you take that and you put that into UT, which has an extraordinarily competitive college football program. And now you're talking about a real business over at Neyland Stadium. Okay.
You know what?
I mean, about 105,000 people worth of real business.
You know who's considered
I'm just saying the double A team is you know, is small potatoes and redneck corruption compared to what, you know, what's going on over there. I'm sure.
You know who's the number one guard considered of all time at University of Tennessee? Lou's dad.
Oh, okay.
Lou's dad.
Right. Michael's, huh? Okay.
And he was. I think he was roommates of Doug Atkins, who played for the Bears, and he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but this is the thing is, anytime you bring money and the concentration of money into anything, you're going to get hinky stuff. Okay, I mean, if you look at just what was going on last night, you know, we just had I see the what was the eye of this storm that's basically got a bullseye in my house, as you brought up at the beginning of the show. Last night, I watched several Chasers live streaming in Perry, which is and I know exactly where that is. It's maybe 5-6 miles off the coastline. Okay, the town. I've driven down the road these guys were on. And I'm watching the storm come in on the radar and the eye wall, you know, them going through it, all right? And, of course, oh, it's 100, you know, it's a Cat 4, it's 100, it's catastrophic. Guy's standing outside his truck, straight up, in the wind. I assure you, having gone through Ivan at my house in Florida, and after the power went off, I was at the back of my garage was in the lee of the wind, so I could actually open that door and go outside without getting instantly ripped out of the building. Okay, I went out there to get to the external main breaker panel and shut off the circuits, because if we flooded, I did not want to have the possibility of power coming back on with the water having contaminated the system. And had a pair of dive goggles on. Because I didn't know whether I was going to be completely in the lee, even though as it turns out I was.
Well, if you got sand whipping at your eyeballs at that speed, you're in bad shape.
Well, but I'm not because I've got the wall of the building there, okay, and the wind's coming from the other side. Well, I made the mistake of sticking my head around the corner with the goggles on. And fortunately, my reactions were fast enough to catch a strap as they were ripped off my face. Right, so, you know, if I had been dumb enough to actually put my body out there, I would have been slammed against the neighbor's fence. There is no way. Now, that was a Cat 3, a legitimate Cat 3.
Well, over 100 miles an hour, you can't stand up, right? Or is it over 85
or
something?
Right. So these guys were doing, I mean, this was, and I'm looking at the trees as well, right, and the signs and the other stuff. These guys are in maybe 75, 80 mile an hour winds. Okay, I mean, yeah, it's sporty. Don't get me wrong. It was it's a real hurricane. It's, you know, yes, surge is way worse than wind most of the time anyway, because there's nothing you can do about it. I mean,
if
water is water.
I wanted to ask you this morning. I'm glad you brought it up. If there's a 15-foot storm surge and the place is pretty flat like Florida is, how far inland are you? If you're a mile inland, are you okay? Or 2 miles?
What's your elevation?
That's what I'm saying. If it's dead flat, you're...
Well, I'm saying it goes in however far the elevation is, right? So, I mean, you know, Perry is about 40 feet above sea level. All right, the town. It's a few miles inland, but it's about 40 feet above.
So they're gonna be relatively.
They didn't get a, they didn't get any search. They got the wind and they got the rain. They didn't get any search. Now if you're on the coast and you're the house you're in is 6 feet above, well, guess what?
Yeah, you're in trouble.
Right. Yeah, you got a problem because there's 10 feet of surge. Well, you've got 4 feet of water in your living room.
Well, I guess so, when I say there's a 15-foot surge, even if it's dead flat. 1,000 yards inland, is it still 15 feet, or is it 14 or 13?
It's 15 feet above sea level. So if 1,000 yards in is 5 feet above sea level, which it probably is.
Well, that's what I'm saying. How far would the wave go?
Whatever that is, and then on top of that, the other thing you have to realize is that in a storm, just like any other thing. The water level is the water level, so that's the surge, that's the amount that rises, and then you get the waves on top of that. So if you've got 5 miles of fetch, my house had about 7 from the direction the storms usually came, so you've got 7 miles of open water between you and the next shore, and the waves build up on that. Now that's enough under really nasty storm conditions for you to get another 2 or 3 feet of wave, right? So the water goes up 5, and then you got another 3, and the 3 is from the waves. Well, guess what? Those will bust the windows, and right, now, yeah. So, I mean, it is, surge is the big risk with these things on the coast. But if you are 40 feet above sea level, wherever you are, 20 feet of surge is not going to flood you.
But the one that hit Florida last time, and I asked this because my buddy Bill, his brother or somebody down there, was living in that area in Florida, got the last one. Well, once you started to get inland, it's a lot of swamp, right?
Well, but the thing is, it's just, what is the, I mean, like around Perry, where this storm went in, other than in town, the coastline where it went in is pretty much the best place you could ever have something like this come, because there are basically no people. It's swamp and it's forest.
Okay.
Now, nobody likes the idea of a serious hurricane coming, right? But what there aren't is $5 million houses, or at least not very many.
And now no high rise. Well, this dude brought his two cars, his sports car, his midlife crisis car, and another car, about 5 miles inland and rented a garage. The garage is gone, and so are the cars. There's somewhere in the swamp.
To
be determined if they ever are found by somebody 1,000 years from now.
Right. Well, one of the things that people do on the coast, and it's smart as long as you're intelligent about how you do it, is they put the houses on stilts. Okay. So you've got 6 feet of relief from the ground to the water level.
That's a big Carolina thing too, isn't it?
Right, and then you put the house on 10 foot 10 foot stilts. Okay. Well, now if there's a 10 foot surge. You're probably okay because there'll be 5 feet of, battering wave on top of that, but it's below the level of the building. The problem is, if you're a dum-dum and you leave your car down there, all right, underneath, then your car gets picked up by it and smashes the pilings and may take your house out.
Well, plus the pilings better be pretty sturdy.
Well, they are. I mean, the people that do that are not stupid about it. And if you enclose that at all, then you nail up plywood, but there's nothing holding it on. So when the surge comes up, it just blows that all out.
Kevin, if I never have to go through one of these in Florida, it's okay by me. Just saying.
I think that would be all right with me too. But instead, I'll just drive right into the teeth of it.
These guys did, and I mean, that's what I'm saying. I watch this. Anybody I've got people on my forum. They're like, the drop zones that they drop said, 140 mile wind. I don't care what the thing had over water. What I care about is what did it do to people where it could actually do damage. Right, and these guys that were it's a whole genre, and of course they're making money selling subscriptions to their channels chasing these things, just like they do with tornadoes. It's the same kind of group of people that do this.
Why haven't we heard anything about oil platforms? Are there no oil platforms in this part of the Gulf?
Not in that part. No, it's further to the west. But I will guarantee you this. If one of those people with one of those things had tried to do what they did in the middle of Ivan down my street right in front of my house, in the middle of that storm when it came in, their truck would have been in the guy's house next door.
Okay. Yeah, well, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, to get back real quick to this, what's going on with his name, image, and likeness, does anybody have any idea where this is going to land? I mean, Kevin, what do you think about, is every school involved with this? It's what happens if you're a high school coach and you find out some kid just got some big contract? Can you even coach the kid anymore, or is he going to act like he's a...
Actually, there are high school kids that have gotten contracts.
One of my buddies I was talking about earlier, he knows a guy that the kid's got a... He's a six figures, and the kid's a junior or something. Now, are they going to direct what college he goes to because they're giving him the money or what? I would think.
Well, they did it when it was all under the table, so yeah, why not do it not when it's above board?
I don't understand how people think that this. I mean, if you want to have a delineation between professional and amateur sports, then this is the what we're doing right now is the craziest thing in the world. If you don't care, then okay, then you don't care. But this is allowing this at the collegiate level means it is now creeping down into the high school and junior high level, and the club soccer level. And the travel team stuff is already stupid enough. Now you're going to add more to it. I'm sorry, I strongly disagree with this because the reality is that you just do the math on this. What are the odds that somebody who plays at the high school level manages to actually make money at this as a pro?
Well, I don't see how the shoe contractor's making money on that kid. Is it all betting on the future? What is it?
All right, well, he's trying to sell shoes.
Well, but I mean,
they'll get some endorsements. They'll make it cool at the high school level. That'll be a little bit different than what's cool at some other level. That's a marketing issue. But when we're talking about what the difference between this, and I got to go, so I'm just going to give you a thought, and I'm going to hit and run on you, and you guys can continue to discuss. What the colleges are doing at this point is they're clinging to an employment model where they have these employees that are athletes, and they want to pass them off as students participating in an extracurricular activity, because everything that is related to employment, legally speaking, financially speaking, things like contributing to workman's comp and silly things like that, exposure to collective bargaining, following employment laws, non-discriminatory stuff, disciplinary processes, all of that kind of stuff, they don't want. And so, they get off the hook by saying they're just students in an extracurricular activity, and let somebody else pay them that keeps an arm's length. This can't hold forever. It's a model that is getting pushed by the money, and it's not going to hold up anymore.
No, it's not.
It's just a matter of how long.
Now, Kevin, you're right, and that's, I mean, if you look at all of the other insanity that's going on in the world, with politics and the push of these things. And now we're screwing high school kids. I'm sorry.
We're not screwing them. They're flying into it with eyes open, and the parents are right with them.
Kids can't sign contracts, so their parents have to be on board with it.
I'm saying the parents are certainly in on it, but I don't know about the kids being as savvy as people think they are. I mean, these are the same kids that are grabbing whipped cream charges and huffing them.
Good point.
All right,
I got to go, you guys. Right. I'll be listening, though.
Carl had if I saw him today, I think he's still a buddy, a guy I went to high school with. Ended up playing ball, and he was a high school or a little college All-American, whatever the hell that is, at Augustana's center. Nice guy, good ball player. And he was coaching. He's telling me, this is a long time ago, he goes, these recruiting trips where kids are in eighth grade. He goes, it's so bizarre how much your school needs this kid. We don't need this kid. he goes, it's one thing for the kid to lap it up. It's quite another for the parents. And I sit there and I kept thinking about, my parents were never this stupid.
What is with these people?
I know, but Chief, it's the same thing. It's the same mentality. Okay, let's farm somebody. Who are we now farming? These parents are farming their own effing children.
Well, it's when you know, I always got stories, Carl, and I don't know. I remember this stuff. I don't know why I do, but for years and years and years, I went to the same barber on 95th Street. Joe is a little Italian guy. He's a character. We went and he'd tell me all about going back to Italy and all that stuff, but he was there forever. And sometimes, Carl, you'd go in there and there'd be nine people waiting, and they'd all wait and sit there and BS with each other for 2 hours to get a haircut.
Right.
You know, and sometimes he'd have booze on the table. And if somebody came in, then went to the hot dog stand, they'd bring in like 15 hot dogs so everybody was there. But, you know, it was an old time barbershop. Somebody's going to the track, everybody gave money for a bet, you know, the usual routine. Well, the lawyer group next door, one of the kids was going to Evergreen Park High School, and I guess he was real good. So the one of the assistant coaches comes in to recruit the kid. And the coach says to the old man, he's a tough old bird, he goes, let me make thing one perfectly straight. For those 4 years, we own your kid. And the guy goes, are you going to walk out or am I going to throw you out? Nobody owns my kid. Get the bleep out of here.
Yeah.
But tuition was $4,000. Now, I mean, I even, my nephew's got two terrific little girls. And the older one's tall and, you know, she's in ballet and all this stuff. And she seems, you know, has some talent. Let's put it that way. I don't know. Who knows? I can't, you know, help myself by saying, gee, are you going to learn how to pitch a softball? I mean, you know, I mean, the thought that, or when are you going to take fencing lessons? You know, the idea that you could get a fencing scholarship to Notre Dame and it's worth, you know, by that time it's going to be worth $500,000. I mean, it has to at least cross your mind. Where in my day, my parents, my mom saved up the Social Security from when my dad died, so that was my tuition. That was $3,200 a year. She didn't care if I played football or, I mean, she would have said, what are you doing? You're knocking yourself out. You know, but, I mean, that somehow it has changed. I mean, in those days, I know that, you know, some guys might have goosed a few people some money, but by and large, the George Connors of the world, the Leon Harts, in the 50s and 60s, you went there, you had a summer job. The football guys showed up maybe a week or two before everybody else, so you still had your summer job. The Thanksgiving was the last game. They never went to a bowl game. I mean, you played a 10-game schedule, or not even that. It was probably an 8-game schedule. It was pretty close to being an extracurricular activity because even people that went to the NFL was not a great livelihood. Dr. J's dad.
Right.
Dr. J's dad, well, he's a lot older than that, but he'd be 100 now probably. But he played for Cal. He was a contemporary of Frank Gifford. And he was one of the biggest men in the Pac-10 at the time. He was in med school. He wanted to be a doctor. And you know, the pro football was making like $6,000 a year or something. He said Frank Gifford's first year, and he was a big star, made like $7,000 his first year. Well, the coach said to him, I said, Dr. J's dad was John. John, if you can come to practice, if you don't have a lab, come on out. If you can make it on a Saturday, we sure could use you. He played, you know, when he could. When he was there, he started. He's a big, big dude. And the thought of him being owned by the football program when he was in med school never even crossed his mind. It's gotten more and more every year. It's not like 1 year it was one way and 1 year another.
Oh, no, I know. Yeah. I know. It's just, but this is, you know, we were going back and forth about this whole thing with, you know, with M2 and the Fed and, you know, all this other stuff on the, you know, on the list, right? And how the money ends up being what it is and ultimately corrupts all of it. And, it, you know, and a comment that I made was, well, you know, look, the Fed thought that they could get away with this kind of stuff in the 1970s, and, you know, there was your policy mistake, and we know what happened.
But they seem to be doing a better job. This is what you and I are, I won't say arguing about, because I really hope you're right. But this has been way too long. They managed to get from 68 to 75 before it blew up. So they got like seven years. This time we're pushing 17, and they don't think there's a problem. They're going right back to it.
I know, but you know what? But here's the thing: you take a look at what's going on around the, you know, in out on the street. All right, when you look at the data that's available from out on the street, so consumer debt, things like this, right? And everyone says, well, but you got all these guys that they have their 401ks, they're happier than a pig in slop, and all this. Okay, that's nice, except these people, for the most part, are folks in my age cohort, right? Because the ones that are much older are dead.
And they give their money to their kids and pay taxes on the piggy move up.
Well, and they get the stepped up basis. But the thing is, the kid has to spend, at some point, someone spends the money, right? And when you look at the people on the other end of the scale that provide, and this is where I've been on about this now for 20 years, and I've only gotten more strident about it as it's gone on because it's gotten worse. As you bifurcate the country, in that there's people that have, whether they earned it or they got it by inheritance, if we look at the history across time, if you are a trust fund child and you never have to do a thing in the world because your dad, I don't care if he had a 401k or he just happened to have a bunch of NVIDIA stock, doesn't matter how he got it, right? Or he was an entrepreneur like myself. Within two generations, all that money's gone. Every time.
Well, sure. But here's what you just said. There's more contained in there than maybe even If you see people, and you know what? I have people, I still get new clients a lot. And somebody will come in with $1 million, $2 million check.
Right.
And I'm very happy for them. They're always really, I don't think I've ever had, maybe I've had one or two crummy clients, but virtually everybody's a salt of the earth, for God's sake. That's why I love doing it. If you were to say, how much of this $2-4 million did you actually earn, which I would never right. ask, by the way, it's not even close.
Right.
It's I happened to buy an extra house, because I like to remodel stuff, and I bought it at, $100,000 15 years ago, and now I just sold it for like $800 or something. I mean, it's all some my dad somehow, on his last gasp, he bought Apple at $5 or something like that. It's almost, and I'm not saying that's bad. Having your money work for you is a good thing. That's what I try and do for people. That's my living. But it's
all right.
But it's weird that the savings. If you were to say to somebody like when I was growing up, how do you save money? And my uncle would say, well, that's easy. You make $100 a week and you live on 80.
Right.
Put 20 in the bank. That's so far afield of any thought process now. Nobody thinks like that.
Here's the problem. Remember, saving, basic economics here. Savings is investment.
Yep.
Okay. So, and by the way, savings is not the GDP definition, which is paying down debt is savings. No, it's not. Savings is the excess after you pay all of your living expenses,
right.
including debt service. Okay, so you can't, you have to be careful because people twist words to, to mean whatever they want it to mean.
Plus, they have no idea right? these definitions we're even talking about.
Well, but Chief, a lot of this is malicious. Okay, for 100 years, we had a definition of the word vaccine.
Oh yeah,
and all of a sudden now it doesn't mean what it meant. 20 years ago, all right, because the CDC turned around and said, no, it means this. And now you go look it up in the dictionary and the definition changes. One of the problems with the internet in general, I was one of the guys that built the effing thing, so I'm somewhat responsible for this.
Guys like Carl Gore,
Carl and Gore and all that, yeah. But I'm somewhat responsible for this in that you can't unprint a book. All right. So if I grab the dictionary off my shelf, 100 years from now, it's going to say the same thing it said 100 years ago.
Yep.
Right? I can't unprint the book. But what I can do is unpublish something that is on the internet. I can change it and make what used to be there disappear without a trace. And we are doing that in so many areas, and in the economic world, It is nowhere worse than it is in places that you see now. You know, I look at this and we talked about this. Microsoft selling at 15 times sales. Okay, that's insane.
It's insane. But and yet, every single time, it the only other, well, I'm not going to say only other time. As you know, I being an index trader, most of the investments I do for people are in ETFs. I mean, the big ones, the ones that trade a lot. Because unless somebody has a real desire for a stock or two, I don't hold myself out as the world's best stock picker. Because I'm not. You know, and I'm not so sure anybody is really, but at least I admit it. So if somebody wants to be in the market and doesn't really care, I mean, they care. We may decide, like my brother has a whole bunch of people in the XLV. You ever traded that?
No.
That's the healthcare piece of the S&P 500.
Yeah, I know what it is. Yeah.
But he's got people in there, and for a long time, we had a lot of people wanted to be in the XLE until oil didn't do much for a while.
Right. Oil, yeah.
Energy, I'm saying,
yeah.
But these are so it removes the responsibility of me picking five oil stocks, and all of a sudden I'm a dummy and I pick one that goes under or something. You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
So, but I mean, but now the everything has a flip side. The flip side of that, and it's so eerily. Now, whether it's going to end the same way, I don't know, and I hope not. So eerily similar to 2000 or 1998, 1999, because the S&P wasn't good enough. We wanted one a little, you know, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it because we have a lot of people in it. They decided we need something a little racier because the big stocks weren't really that much in the S&P. Those were the old, you know, the Exxons and the IBMs, and nobody wanted to trade that crap, right? So we get this QQQ, and all of a sudden the QQQ starts racing. You know, and we had people wanted there. We went from 100% spiders in our Protected Index program in 97, probably to half and half in 6 months because people wanted in this thing.
Well, yeah, they wanted in the queues, yeah.
But all of a sudden, now you look at the queues back then, and I keep rattling off these from memory. Just like today, I'm going to say five of the stocks became high 40% of the queues. And it was, I know it was Intel, it was Oracle, it was Cisco, Microsoft, was it Dell the fifth?
Anyway. I think Dell was the other one, yeah.
So those five stacks, so all you had, so now everybody's pouring their money into this thing, and it's going up and up and up. And because every single time, now if somebody wings me $1 million today, which people do, and say, well, Chief, we want to be, put 500 grand in the queues, because I don't really like any of these top seven stocks. I'm going to go, well, out of the 500 grand, 250 is going in those top seven stacks.
Right.
Really? I mean, I'm not going to try and talk somebody out of it, but I'm just be aware.
That's where it's going.
Yeah, just
right.
Just be aware. So the fact that Microsoft, which you wonder why the hell a stock that big could ever be that high in terms of sales, same thing happened to Cisco. Cisco got to 11, 12 times sales.
I absolutely not. Yeah, no, I mean, duh, I've been doing it that
I know,
long,
but I'm saying,
right?
if you looked at Cisco at 60-something, you'd say, why the hell is anybody paying 60 for the stack? Because guys like me are putting money in the queues for our clients, and we're buying Cisco on a daily basis.
Right.
At any price.
That's right, and the same thing is happening. The index investing to a large degree drives this, okay. But the problem with it, as everybody found out in 2000, is that crank goes two directions.
That has not happened, other than like a couple of month COVID thing or something. And how long?
I know, but you know, here was an interesting thing. I the other day. I you know, dumb me, or watching social media craziness. There was a guy out there who was you know, hooting and hollering about the fact that, oh no, this is, you know, everything is wonderful and beautiful, and we've got have to be in the index, and the reason you have to be in the indices and, you know, and buy these things is because even though GDP has some bad times. Stocks are the S&P 500 are up percentage-wise huge essentially all the time. Okay, it's you know, the negative correlation there is forget about it. Just buy the index. All right, so just for grins and giggles, I got out spreadsheet and put GDP numbers end of year for every year from 2011 to 2023, because of course we don't have 2024 yet, right? So the year's not over. And the S&P, same thing, and a percentage change, right, from the start of the previous year. Because I want to test this guy's alleged numbers that he put up on social media. Well, he's lying.
God. Oh, God. Yeah, you can't do that.
Oh, he's lying.
Yeah.
By the way, in 2022, the S&P finished at 1231 at 3839. It started at 4766. How well did you do that year?
Well, yeah. We got to go to break. S&P futures now up 4, NASDAQ futures up 12. I'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 5. NASDAQ futures up 23. Fed key inflation gauge at 2.2% in August. Lower than expected. I'm moving my feet. Ricky, don't pee on my shoes and tell me it's raining. Just saying. We got a 6.7% monthly, yearly rate in the money supply going up, and we're telling people our inflation's 2.2. You know what? If you can get away with it, I guess that's what we should do. And they're better marketers than I am. Let's just put it that way. I said we've moved into the positive territory here. We're in Asia, and we're gonna. I notice how I've lured Carl into this little trap. I think I have him in. And I'm going to ask him to explain this Asian phenomenon over the last 3 days and how one of these days it's all going to end. Boy, oh boy. I hope he's not short the Asian market. I'm glad I'm not. Nikkei up 903, 2.3%. Hang Seng up 707, 3.5%. Shanghai up 86, 2.8%. Over 3,000. Never thought we'd see that in a while. Europe rolling right with him. DAX up 208, 1%. The FTSE up 29.4%. CAC around up 36.4%. European shares surged to a fresh record high. I should have told asked Ricky to come up with is it Sheena Easton? We're on an all-time high. The Bond girl, boy, she was hot too. Not that I noticed. Yesterday, Dow was up 260, S&P up 23, NASDAQ up 108. Interesting, you know, NASDAQ at one point was up over 300 and it came back pretty rapidly in the morning. Still finished up, but way off the top. Bonds down 2 basis points, 3.77. The Bund down 3 basis points, 2.14. Japan up 2 basis points, 0.85. Oil, and this, I'm going to ask Carl's opinion. Well, actually, we're down a little bit more, but we're 67.59. And oil cannot, despite what Saudi threatens and the Russians threaten, oil's not going anywhere. I think there's just too many producers. Brent down 12 cents, 71.48. Natural gas up a penny, 2.76. Or it could be China not using so much of it. Gold down 6.60, but still 26.88. Strong week. Silver down 6X, but 32.27. Remember, 2 weeks ago, some guy reminds me of me, said, boy, whenever it gets a 30, it's a sale. I hope he didn't do that. It's 32.29. Copper down 4 cents, 4.59. I did warn you, but it has been a sale. It's not the same as it's a sale this time. Euro, 111.7, so it's pretty much where it has been. Pound, same. Pound's over 134. It's a little stronger than the dollar. And the yen is 142, so that's a little stronger as well. Crypto. The Bitcoin's up 632, 65,000. Anything that's valued in dollars has been up this week. What do you think Carl and I are talking about? Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, spot. You know, if the Sox went out, that'll really be something. But the Tigers are trying to get in the playoffs.
Yeah. Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:38 here in beautiful Chicago. 65 degrees right now with a high of 71. Windy with intervals of clouds and sunshine. Tonight will be very, very clear with a low of 61 degrees over Phoenix, Arizona. 81 degrees right now with a high of 113. Very hot with sizzling sunshine, breaking the record of 107 set in 2009. Tonight will be clear and very warm with a low 82 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe, 32 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 15 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 36 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 21 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 31 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, the White Sox evade history. White Sox win against the Angels 7-0. And I don't know much about baseball, but I think a 7-0 is pretty good, right?
It's,
I
mean, seven, it's 7 runs in one inning. It's the only inning anybody scored in.
Oh, well, okay. Well, we got a couple of games today, though, so we can watch a few more innings. A couple more chances. We got Cubs playing the Reds at 1:20 p.m. The White Sox playing the Tigers at 5:40 p.m. And the Diamondbacks playing the Padres at 8:40 p.m. Lastly, the NFL. Yesterday, the Cowboys beat the Giants 20-15. And this Sunday, September 29th, we got the Bears playing the Rams at 12 p.m. And the Cardinals playing the Commanders at 3:05 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Don't mention that about the baseball too much. Dan will be dragging you out to Sunday morning softball. Be good for you.
Yeah, that sounds fun, though. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it is fun. It's a good time. All ability levels, so you'd fit right in and you'd get better quick, I assume. Carl, what was I going to? I had some little anecdote for you that I'll think of, but you got to explain to us is how this all is going to end someday. By the way, as you know, I'm with you. You can't be in the way of it. Look at what happened in China, for God's sake. The place is going down a rat hole. Russell says, you know, that this is going wrong. And these people can't pay their debts. The debt is huge.
By the way, they just sunk one of their nuclear submarines at the dock.
How do you do that?
I forgot close hatch.
Well, but I mean, you can't go down very far. How deep's the water?
Well, sunk is still sunk. I mean, obviously they could refloat it, but sunk is still sunk, right? It's full of water.
Oh, it is full of water. It's just, oh, God.
Well, it's sunk.
It's sunk.
Right? Oh, I mean, you know.
Hey, you know, speaking of which, if you want to see something, I'm going to get back on this topic about pouring money. What if you actually felt that way about the Chinese economy? And I think Russell might have been short in there. Hopefully he didn't nick too bad. And all of a sudden they pour money in. How is it not, for anybody who's under the age of 40, how is it not just always the solution, Carl? Pour money in, the market goes up.
Yeah, it is up until the point that it breaks. And as I have pointed out for a long time, what this ends up doing always, because you can print credit. It's not money, it's credit. Money is what you have left over after you produce something and you pay your expenses. But they spend exactly the same.
Oh, yeah.
So from the standpoint of the guy on the street, they say they printed money, okay? But they did. The thing is,
well, if you can write it, if you write a check and the check clears and you're the Fed,
it's the same as if you
ran off the $100 bills and hand them to somebody.
Chief, I get that. Yeah. It doesn't matter whether the check was drawn on Discover because it's on your credit card, right? The thing is that the problem with this is you can print all of that you want. What you can't do is print a chicken. You can't print a gallon of gasoline.
Right.
You can't print a steel beam to make a building, okay, or a bridge. And you can't print a yard of concrete. You have to actually go make those. And so, and now, the latest hype that's driving a huge percentage of this, probably half of this run in the market over the last couple of years, is this garbage about AI. All right? I have an article up this morning. I'm just gonna. I'm gonna push a hair.
The one up in the market in the last, certainly since Powell talked 2 months ago, in the last 6 months is all money supply.
Well, I understand. But the reason it's being driven into those particular names, you know, the Nvidias and the stuff like this, and the Microsofts. By the way, you want to talk about absolute, you know, large amounts of money corrupt anything and everything. OpenAI, which is non-profit, right? And now they're talking about converting to a for-profit company, and Altman somehow managing to get something like $7 or $8 billion worth of equity.
Yeah.
Now there's no legal way to do that I'm aware of. You cannot convert any of the assets of a nonprofit to private gain. I don't know how they do that either.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know how they think they're going to pull this off without people going to prison for felony conversion. But this is the latest, the latest scheme here. But let me just point out.
You said something. I'm going to lob this one out there. I'm not saying you're wrong, but just from the other side, the money's pouring into the market. Some of it, me and my clients, to these seven stocks.
Right.
I think if AI had never been in. The word had never been invented, the money would still be pouring in there. They would have to find another excuse as to why.
Well, be a different set of stocks. Okay.
Well, yeah.
But see, here's the thing. It was the forward expectations in the late 1990s that drove those multiples and those price sales numbers to the stratospheric heights where they went. And then on top of that, the Fed, along with Treasury, stoked the fear that the world was going to end on 1/1/2000 when the date rolled over and all this old legacy software was going to explode and your power wasn't going to work, right? And so that was the element of it. And of course, the latter was a load of BS and oops, then you had the oops, right, that came from that.
But you had a huge bulge in money coming in too.
But it was all credit and it exploded in everybody's face. Now the problem today, just think about this for just 10 seconds. So you got up this morning and you went and you took a leak, right? You pulled the handle and flushed.
And it actually worked.
And it worked, okay? Now, how did, we don't think about this, how did that device, the pedestrian device that we all use every single day, how did that actually end up coming into being? Because a couple hundred years ago, there was no such thing. If it was 3 o'clock in the morning and you had to pee, you either used a chamber pot or you lit a candle or an oil lamp and went out and did your business in the outhouse, right?
That wouldn't be good in the middle of the night.
Well, and in the middle of the night, maybe you use the chamber pot, right? We'll dump it in the morning.
Yep.
So the thing is, and the last piece of it was the flush valve and that ended up being the flush toilet, the crapper. However, all the other elements of it had to be there in order for that to work. Sewage piping, pressurized water, all of these other things. And all of this came from out of scope thinking.
For
somebody...
Sure.
He didn't have an information base of things before. He literally dreamed them in the middle of the night. Okay?
<Yeah.
laughs> And so here's the basic problem with this so-called artificial intelligence. There has never been a single instance in the history of computing where a machine has produced a single thing out of scope. Never.
It doesn't have imagination like we do.
It has never happened. Okay? My cat dreams more when he's flailing his paws around as he's crashed on the couch and he's, maybe he's dreaming about catching and eating a mouse or a bird. He dreams more than the most powerful AI machine ever has.
Isn't it wild when you see your dog? I don't have cats, but you see your dog dreaming and you wonder what the hell they're dreaming about.
Well, your dog's doing the same thing,
sure.
Right? I mean, your dog's laying there.
Sometimes they wake themselves up and they're afraid. They must be like somebody chasing them or something.
Well, was that? There was a coyote after him, right, in his dream.
Yeah.
But before you
go a little bit further, you give me a chance to ask the question I always wanted to ask regarding the Y2K stuff, because I have a feeling you know a lot about this stuff. People, even like you just said, it was going to be a big problem. And then it wasn't, poof. Now, okay, I was on the board of the SIBO at the time, and I can believe this, Carl, because I'm the biggest Luddite in this stuff. I was on the double secret committee for people hacking into the SIBO at the time, but I also was on one where we're talking about the Y2K stuff. Now, the CBOE had, at the time, I'm going to say, more phone lines than a city of 50,000 people or something. It had.
Yep.
And Every place there was a phone. There was, you know, how many lines that were in there with the little buttons you push. Every phone could access 10 different lines. It was, and every one of those phone sets had chips in there, and they were all, right. Most of them were designed for something better, and because they didn't make it, they were knockoff chips you'd put in a phone or something. So you didn't even know what you had. And I seem to recall guys saying that some of the old code had a date in it every 5 lines or 8 lines or something. So you're right. At the end of the day, nothing happened. But I also know that a place like the CBOE, for probably the 3 or 4 years before that, after people became aware of a potential problem, all the normal, you know, renovations to the system that might have extended maybe to 2005 were pretty much all accelerated to where most of them were done before Y2K. Now, my question is everybody says nothing really happened. If people would have been totally oblivious and not done anything like that, what would have happened? I think a lot of bad crap would have happened if they recognized at all that something might happen.
Yes and no. So essentially the issue was that in a lot of old legacy software was written in COBOL. And the problem there was that people used 2 digits for the year. Okay? So when you went from 99 to 00, if you were doing, okay, what's this guy's payment owed by computing months, you know, times 12 plus year, right? The difference. Well, when it rolls over, you get this huge number. Because all of a sudden it's 100, right?
Yeah.
All right. So that was what was freaking people out, was that there was going to be a huge dislocation of that kind. And it was, you know, it was going to screw with everything from people's bank balances because of interest
complications. But even your airline reservations, there was no next year, right?
Right. And so, you know, that was the thing, was that as you, but now with things like airline reservations, you know, as you got into 1999, well, you know, I book a trip for, you know, for February of 2000, right? No, but I booked it in September. You know, how long before the plane leaves the ground? We all know that that's not very long, but if you're using a 2-digit year, all of a sudden that can kind of be a problem, right?
Yeah.
And so that was the fear, but that was recognized well in advance. And so, yeah, people did go through and they, and a lot of these databases were very large, and this was when storage was pretty expensive, and these systems were built when storage was very expensive. And everybody talks about the, you know, the impact of computing technology and how, you know, computers have gotten so much faster and everything else. The underlying story behind that is not so much the CPU processing, although that certainly has been a big deal. It's that disk storage, any kind of permanent storage, used to be hideously expensive, and now it is so cheap you literally almost can't meter.
Isn't that what Oracle was big in the storage part? Because we had Oracle stuff at the CBOE for a lot of the regulatory stuff, the history and everything. Was that Oracle stuff?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, and that's the whole thing with databases, right? I mean, that's their job, and it also used to be that even back in the 1980s. In the 1990s, the big difference between a mainframe, the reason you bought and used a mainframe, was not so much the processing capability. You could do that with a cluster of personal computers. The problem was you couldn't move data in and out into storage at extremely high speeds. And if you're going to work with large data sets, you have to be able to do that. And so that was the advantage that they held, and it was where a lot of the push to try to find, all right, how do we solve this problem? How do we take this business problem that requires this huge data set and break it up into small enough chunks that we can do it on smaller, much less expensive machines? Today, the PC sitting on my desk that's a foot away from my mouth has the I.O. capacity of an IBM mainframe 40 years ago.
Well, you know, this is once in a while, you learn something from me. I learn something from you all the time. If I told you this, guess what the original, when the CBOE was started, and people were going to start trading options fairly rapidly, what do you suppose the original trade match system? Now, if you were to ask somebody in the 90s what the capacity of the CBOE was, they'd say maybe 1 million contracts a day. They would they would give you the capacity in terms of contracts traded and, right. and transactions traded. Well, now it's, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with quotes. Because right. you sound like a gazillion quotes. It's a lot different. What do you suppose the original system that they bought to do the trade match?
It was a VM360?
They bought the United Airlines reservation system because it matched people to planes.
The one that ran Sabre.
Yeah. 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 And for matter of what it is now, I've been off the board for a long time, but all the other stuff, they kept that for matching the trades. And they just kept adding on other computers for doing the quotes and all the other stuff. And they took, you know, as the trade numbers got more and more, they relieved the original computers of some of their, you know, their job.
Well, that was, see, that was, you know, when you think about it, that problem is actually that's a big data set problem, right?
Yeah, sure.
And that's, there were business issues, you know, business problems and business cases that there was no other answer to them in an automated world other than mainframes. And it wasn't because of the CPU processing, it was the data storage and manipulation that was the issue. And there was no way to do it. And I did a fair amount of work at trying to crack that nut and break those workloads down. In my earlier professional years, it was a big part of what I did. And then, of course, you know, today we laugh at this kind of thing. But what's old is new again. Okay, and that now, the push is this whole AI thing and these huge data sets. All right, which, you know, back in the 1980s and 1990s, you couldn't even contemplate the kind of data sets that they're sucking into these things on a daily basis. There was no way to do it.
My first job was at Allied Van Lines. Allied Van Lines had some, you'd say, okay, well, they're a moving company. They had some of the most unique...
Well, they got the same issue, but it's not as big, but it's the same problem.
They also had communication issues. So,
right.
So they actually had, back in those days, remember the old, at least a couple of things, not Trump lines, Trump, what the hell was the name of the thing? We had a... Where you could call everybody in the country on the one line, a wide open long distance. Wasn't called a trunk line? That was it. Something like that. Watts lines. Remember those things?
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Allied Van Lines. Guess who? Maybe even today, had the biggest phone bill in the country. We're talking 1978, 77, 75. Was Merrill Lynch.
Yeah, okay, well, that doesn't surprise
me.
And
Allied was pretty close, because all these people were riding all around the country and all these agencies, you couldn't call regular long distance. So Allied Van Lines had something like 55 outbound and inbound watts, which was huge.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I worked at a place that had to use it for backup because we couldn't be offline, like, ever. Well, right, and we had dedicated circuits for ordinary stuff. But, yeah, oh, my God, when something went wrong, the size of the bill...
Well, if you picked up the phone on the CBOE floor to the New York floor, that was called a tie line. Picked it up, it rang there. But the weird part, Carl, if it actually wasn't a tie line, but it was a Watts line, when you start, you know, pushing the buttons to dial it, somebody invented something where you're tying up the line while you're dialing. So somebody invented a computer that would store your finger pokes, and then as soon as the line was open, it'd feed them to it digitally. And you'd save like 5 seconds on the dial-up, and it saved.
Well, because they were paying, paying by the minute for it, so it matters.
It was like $2,000 a month for one of these things. Anyway, but LA Van Lines, if you walked in the lobby and they were proud of them, I bet you've never even seen these except maybe in a museum. They had IBM computers. They had four of them, huge in a row, and they had the tapes there. Remember those things?
Oh yeah.
Was that the storage on the tape? What was on the tape?
Well, so you had. So the tape was essentially for the most part, it was the backup, but it was also archival.
Okay.
And it's just simply because the disk drives were the size of washing machines, and the tape held the capacity of several of those. And so you structured your storage, and this, I mean, it's the same problem we have today. You have storage that is very fast by comparison, and then you have storage that's a little slower. I mean, I've got the same thing here. I've got storage on solid-state disks that's extremely fast, but it's more expensive than storage that's on spinning platters. Okay, so I've got some data on some of the other. Well, same thing was true here, except that the tapes are, they're serial access, So if you want to get to something that's at the end, you have to move it all the way over, right? Because you have to wind it through.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's the that's the way it works, and all of, the scale of it has changed, but the basic issue, the basic problems have not. They've not changed. It's just the scale changes. So it's and what's but what's old is new again, and we get this idea that all of a sudden these things are, you know, this is oh so different, oh so whatever with, you know, the stuff with AI and this and that and the other thing. And I'm like, you know, you guys are selling something that has never happened, and you're claiming it is. It's happening. Oh, yeah. It's real.
Carl, we had 1 minute. Let's flip. We're with you on that. Let's flip to the market here. Now, if you think that China's going down a rat hole, and I think they sort of are, yet you got it stuck where the sun don't shine this week. And and now I think you and I both know from our heart of hearts and our brains that you can't keep telling people that inflation's 2.2% when you're pouring 6.5% money supply in there. We're going to go right back to the old model asset. And you're right. Someday, to a point, how the hell are you going to know the point? And God help you if you're early. Because if you're early, you're going to get shoved right where you don't want it. I mean, it's...
Well, no. I don't have to be short. I can not be in it. I did the same thing when I got out of MCS. I sold the company, and I sat there, and everybody laughed at me for about a year. And then guess who was doing the laughing?
Well, we've changed. See what you think of this. I mean, not giving investment advice, but for the last several clients that came in, and some of the clients have been here a long time, actually most of them, we've kind of shifted away from the Protect Index program was buy a longer-term protective put, try and pay for it by selling nearer-term calls. There's a theoretical reason why that could work and why it has worked for us for a long time. But now lately, we're just running up, and all we're doing is chasing these calls. Plus, you know, people aren't doing as well as if we don't have the calls out there. So we've kind of changed for a lot of the clients. Instead of buying one put per 100 shares of stock and selling the calls, if there's 1,000 shares, we're maybe buying 14, 15 puts, maybe a little further out of the money as kind of a crash protection, but still leaving us pretty long, which has worked out a lot better. But if all of a sudden someday we're down 20%, we're gonna make money because those puts have become 100 delta. So we've shifted our focus based on what's happening here, because I've been doing a lot of research on the Weimar Republic and Argentina. I mean, people talk about Turkey, their inflation and stuff. Look at their stock market; it goes straight up, right? In their currency.
Right. The problem is that the loaf of bread costs half of your gains.
Right. Without a doubt. But I'm saying, but to think that asset prices, the biggest cheerers in the Weimar Republic, where every farmer, where all of a sudden, because the price of corn got so high or the price of chickens, they all paid off their loans in 1 year with money.
That only works if you already have the corn in the ground and the chicken is already alive.
Right, and it only works if you. I mean, right now, if they keep pushing this inflation rate where it is, and you keep a 10-year rate at 3.5%, the money you get back from the government 10 years from now is worth a lot less than what you gave them, and that's what I think they're bargaining at. To be honest with you.
Well, it's what they're trying to do, but the assumption is that the people on the lower end who didn't own it when it started, okay, that you're not going to lose enough of the ability to produce in the process of doing this that it folds back on you and everybody gets the collapse instead. And that's where the failure has come with these systems when they do this kind of stuff. The problem is figuring out exactly where that breakpoint is. It's very, very hard to find it in advance.
Well, yeah. I mean, I had a breakfast. We got a dash and run over, but one of my clients, he said, these interest rates, when they were 1.5%, and the guy's name's John, good guy, real good guy. I said, John, I actually have a client, and he's been on the show a couple times. It was 5-6 years ago, or maybe it was 4 years ago. I said, the single best trade I've seen since I got in the market when the Dow was 800 and you just wanted to be long has been these bonds trading at 30-year bonds at like 1.5% or 10-year. I said, there's only one way to go the other way, yet we were probably short bonds, which means long interest rates, 25 times during the route between.
And you got run over 24 of them.
No, I'd say we ended up positive, but just when it would start, nothing like if you and I would have just bought 3-year puts, sailed around the world, and came back and rang the register. Because every time it looked like they were going, or, you know, there'd be an announcement of some kind, and you'd say, okay, the Fed's losing a little grip here. When you got short, the next day they'd pull something, and all of a sudden it's up to your mouth from the other end.
Yep.
I mean, it probably happened 7 or 8 times. But we did it in a risk-averse way that I'll say, even though we probably got screwed 6 out of 10 times, we were up money. Because at times, you know, we do option spread, so when we win one, we usually make a little more than when we lose one. But it wasn't like it was a game changer where all of a sudden, you know, me and my clients, we ran this, you know, we ran, what is it, the TLTs from 130 to 97 and without looking back. I mean, we didn't. I mean, it was very hard to do that. Matter of fact,
well, it is very hard. It is very hard to do that. I mean, that's the whole challenge. But it's what gets me is all these people that think that like the cracks are not there like today, okay, not showing up. And when you can see whatever you want to claim and whatever you want to believe about the CPI and everything else, the reality of it is that on the ground, I mean, the people that bought into the hype with the Airbnbs and stuff like that around here, they're tasting it at this point, and it's coming from the bottom. All right, and this is showing up everywhere. I mean, I travel a fair bit. I'm seeing it all over the place. Yep. I'm going to go chase fall colors here in another week or two, and I'm getting prices I couldn't get in 2015 on lodging.
On one level, it's going one way. Try and get a spot in Chicago or New York.
Well, you know, it depends because here's the thing. I'm coming out in that general direction for a concert in a few weeks, and there's a wide disparity between, you know, step up one star on the quality of the accommodations, and it's 3 times the price.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we got a day. If you're coming this way, I definitely want to see you, bud. But we'll talk, we might
have a beer.
That would do that. We'll talk on Tuesday. SP Futures up 8, NASDAQ Futures up 35. I'm sure we'll joust over the internet between now and then. We always do it. Enjoy your weekend, and I hope you don't get too much rain. It's going to stop somewhere between you and here, isn't it, I hope?
Dude, it is, you know, we got about 2 or 3 inches yesterday of rain, and we need it. It's extremely dry here, and it's been, like, drizzly, sort of blah, blah, blah all night. The eye of this, of what's left of it, is maybe 100 miles south of me at this point. It's not even raining. I can't even hear the rain outside. It is raining. It's
pretty,
sprinkling.
It's a pretty big storm. I mean, some storms are incredibly intense, but they're narrow. This thing is pretty big.
Oh, it's huge. And the thing is, if you're on the south side of the mountains, like if you're in Asheville right now, you're getting pounded.
Oh,
okay,
right.
Rain-wise. Not wind, but rain-wise.
All right, bud.
So, yeah.
Take care of yourself. SP Futures up 9. NASDAQ Futures up 37. Again, the preferred PCE number came in at 2.2. Everybody should be so happy. Go to the store and save money. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks. Good job, Ricky.
That's all, folks.